Welcome into the Locked On Bengals podcast on a Friday. I'm James Rapine. Great to have you in. We're on Megaphone, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, so iTunes, the iHeartRadio app. Great to have you in on Twitter at James Rapine at Locked On Bengals. If you can't tell, no music today. Broadcasting from my home office, getting set to go to Jacksonville, where I will be watching this Sunday the Bengals take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I mentioned it yesterday, so let's get right to it. I interviewed Dave Lapham on my daily radio show on ESPN 1530 from noon to 1. Dave Lapham, obviously Bengals radio analyst. We talked for a good almost 20 minutes. So I wanted to play that interview for you just so you could hear his insight, because it's great stuff as always. I'm not going to lie and say it's strictly for this podcast, but I wanted all of my Locked On listeners to hear it. So here's my interview that took place Thursday afternoon with Dave Lapham on McCarron, on that potential trade, on Jacksonville this week, and so much more. Here's my one-on-one interview with Dave Lapham.
What have you heard? I'm hearing all of these different things, but the trade deadline deal that wasn't, what exactly happened with A.J. McCarron and him almost going to Cleveland?
Well, you know, my understanding is that the Bengals didn't call Cleveland. Cleveland called the Bengals. Cleveland's the ones that initiated the interest. So I guess the bottom line is, if you were interested you initiate the trade talks,
yeah,
and you don't even pick up a phone to call the league before the deadline, you had turmoil going on within the organization. If I'm Jim Haslam, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, I know that what I have in place right now isn't working, because obviously Hugh Jackson wanted the deal to get done, and it appears that Sashi Brown was not a big fan of it, whether it was too rich a deal or whatever the case may be. So there was discord, you know, amongst the higher ups, the decision makers, and I don't know if Jim Haslam got involved in it or not. And, you know, he's not in Cleveland. He's in Tennessee. He's based in Tennessee. He's a billionaire. He could be traveling anywhere in the world. Bottom line is, his organization in disarray.
Yeah.
I mean, if they initiate a trade discussion and then miss the deadline, there's something rotten in Denmark. There's something wrong there.
Dave Lapham joining us. Dave, the other part of this, I guess, just the trade deadline in general, obviously, naturally, we look at that offensive line, and that's the one position group where I thought maybe the Bengals would explore it, just any potential trades that were out there. Do you know if they did at all?
I'm not sure if there are any discussions about offensive line. I don't think there were any real serious talks there. I don't think there's anybody that anybody was putting on the market as such. I mean, if you've got an offensive lineman that you're willing to get rid of, at this stage of the season, there's a huge reason why. So I'm not sure that there was anybody, you know, that they could have reasonably, you know, acquired in the trade that would have helped them. So, I think my understanding is it was pretty quiet. It was pretty quiet otherwise,
gotcha,
other than the A.J. McCarron talks.
Yeah, which was plenty of noise, as you know, plenty of noise for, I think, both Cleveland and Cincinnati. Dave, I look at this Sunday in the Jacksonville Jaguars, that defensive line, those cornerbacks, just that defense in general. It's a tough ask, at least in my mind. I find it tough, and I want to get your opinion on it, because I watched an offensive line for the Bengals struggle at home against Indianapolis on Sunday. This Sunday, they get a much tougher job against this Jacksonville defense. What do you expect to see? How in the world is that offensive line for the Bengals going to stop that defensive line for the Jags?
Yeah, they're just going to have to somehow, you know, muster a much better performance than they did against Indianapolis. The thing that was bothersome to me, James, is, you know, you play long enough, you can get beaten physically. It happens. I mean, it happens every game. No player totally dominates his guy every single snap. It's at that level, it just doesn't happen. But the problem that I saw was the mental problems, the mental mistakes, the recognition issues, the communication of the recognition of what they were, you know, what they were trying to get up and down the line of scrimmage. There were obviously, some missing links there. And as a result, there were free runners. I mean, everybody's there. and this is just a free runner, you know, of a slot corner where nobody's really, you know, they brought one more than you had to block. And, you know, the quarterback, it's quarterback's responsibility at that point in time to get the football out of his hand. It's not like that. You know, there were free runners where it was the end guy in the line of scrimmage as a rusher, whether it's a defensive end or a linebacker, you know, that was making his way to the quarterback, or even worse, somebody up the middle that was a free runner. And, you know, every team that I've played on, you block from the inside out. You take care of the quarterback from the inside out. The shortest distance to the quarterback is right up at the gut, and quarterbacks hate, you know, pressure in their face. So they were having issues in that regard. There's no doubt about it. And those have to be rectified. You know, they have to do a better job of recognizing and communicating. And the disappointing thing, it happened at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go down into Jacksonville, where they're going to be pretty up in the bit and rowdy, it's going to be a big challenge. There's no question about it. That's in my mind, that's the biggest challenge of the game, how the offensive line will perform.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me, and I've seen some people say that that pre-snap stuff is on Andy and some of it is on the offensive line. How much of it is on either party?
It's probably a combination of both, but I think, you know, Andy sets the, you know, he declares, like most quarterbacks will declare the middle linebacker, and you know, then they set protections from that. But then if Andy audibilizes, the offensive line, you know, has to maybe change your protection based on the audible, and, you know, there can be some communication problems there. And on the road, that's even tougher to do because you can't hear, you know, you can't hear yourself think. So there's a lot of communication that goes on at the offensive line. You know, the center normally, and I know Bodine does set protections. He makes calls to set protections after the quarterback, you know, identifies the structure of the defense, where the middle linebacker is. Because sometimes it can be confusing in nickel and dime packages when you don't have three true linebackers out there. You have to designate people, even though they're not wearing linebacker numbers, for the offensive line's protection purposes. You have to designate them as linebacker-type guys that they would have to, you know, account for in protections.
James Erpine without Mo today here on Cincy 360, joined by Dave Lapham. Dave, is it safe to say that, because I think back to last year, week one, and Andy gets sacked seven times and puts the team on his back against the Jets. It might be my favorite Andy Dalton performance on the road. They get a win against a Jets team that was 10-6 the year before. But he's been hit a ton since then, and it's the offensive line, obviously, this year has been certainly shaky. Might have been one of its worst performances this past Sunday against the Colts. You think those hits, have you noticed a difference in Andy Dalton's play with all those hits and just him maybe not being able to trust the offensive line as much as he could in 2015 and earlier in his career?
Yeah, I think that's human nature. You know, if you get bashed a lot, if you get battered and bruised, knocked around, you know, it's going to affect you. You're going to start seeing and feeling ghosts, you know, in your head. It resets your clock. You know, a quarterback doesn't have eyes in the back of his head or the side of his head. And if you have the quarterback not looking down the football field to discern coverage and start looking at the pass rush because he's fearful of how he's going to get hit and when he's going to get hit, you're in trouble. And, or the other thing the quarterback will do is he'll be, you know, looking down the football field with coverage being dissected, but then he'll, in the back of his head, he's 1,001, 1,002, here they come. And now he'll get out of there. And sometimes for no reason, you know. And there was a play I've talked about a couple of times this week that I saw, you know, looking at the tape, when Andy ran out of bounds and then threw the ball away after he had run out of bounds. Totally unlike Andy Dalton. And, you know, I mean, that he was fried mentally on that play for whatever reason. On that particular play, A.J. Green ran a route where he took it into the front. He was in a wide formation, split wide left, takes it toward the middle of the field, and then bends it back to the corner, and he's matched up against a safety. It's A.J. Green and his safety, and that's it. It doesn't get any better than that from a matchup standpoint. And Andy doesn't pull the trigger. He pulls the ball down. I think it's because he feels like it was time where, you know, geez, he couldn't wait any longer. And now he's out of pocket, and he's got Joe Mixon 5 yards down the field for a check down and doesn't go there, runs out of bounds and throws the ball away. So, you know, tells me he was fried on that particular play. And those are the kind of things that can happen when a quarterback starts getting beaten up like he's gotten beaten up. And, you know, when you walk by his locker after the game, you can see marks on him. I mean, he's actually, you know, he's taking some licks now, and they're leaving a mark. So there's no doubt about it. He's in years past when he's had great protection and gotten the ball out of his hand, you know, he's clean as a whistle. I mean, he doesn't even look like he was in a football game. Well, he looks like he's in a game now when you walk by his locker room after a game.
We're going to get back to my interview with Dave Lapham in just a second here on the Locked On Bengals podcast. But just a quick reminder, if you're betting on games this weekend, you got to use mybookie.ag. It's fast. It's easy. Payouts only take 2 business days. Best of all, use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, and you're going to get up to 100% bonus. So go to mybookie.ag, check it out. A nice mobile site. It's perfect. I use it. You should try it too. If you're looking to bet on who's going to win, you know who's going to win. So try it. Mybookie.ag, use promo code LOCKEDON, and make sure you play, you win, you get paid. This is the Locked On Bengals podcast.
When the offensive line is what it is right now, I just think the margin for error on that offense, it just gets a lot slimmer. And so when Dalton, it just becomes more glaring. Like, there are times, you mentioned that play. I remember a play where he rolled out and he just threw it low to Green by about 4 or 5 yards. Do you think that the line affects all of that, affects him even now when there are open throws? He might not make them, or he might just be a little out of rhythm.
You know, I guess Andy and some of the coaches will tell you that the offensive line does have some effect, but throws like that, that's got to be on the quarterback. You know, if he's out of pocket and all by himself, he's just got to get his mechanics right and throw the football properly. You know, snap his hips and shoulders around, square it up, and throw the ball. You know, I think at some point, you know, you can't absolve the quarterback of all issues because of the offensive line and vice versa. I think, as is the case of football, because it's 22 moving parts at all times, everybody's suit's dirty when it's going well, and everybody's suit's dry clean perfectly when it's going poorly, everybody's suit is dirty, and when it's going well, everybody's suit is dry clean perfectly.
He's Dave Lapham. Dave, I appreciate the time. If there is a key to Sunday, and they haven't really been able to run the ball at all this season, but on offense, if they could get that run game going against Jacksonville, that would do a ton for Andy Dalton, for that entire offense, wouldn't it?
You're right. In my mind, James, this, you know, we talk about it all the time, capturing the line of scrimmage, but they got to try to capture the line of scrimmage against this football team, because all they want to do is run Fournette. Fournette's had 3 games of well over 100 yards, and 3 games of well under 100 yards. So he's averaging almost 100 yards a game. But, I mean, if Baltimore shut him down, you know, teams have shut him down, and that's, you're going to have to do a great job at the line of scrimmage to get that done. If it takes 8 in the box, so be it. I think the Bengals can do that, drop an extra guy in the box, one of the safeties, and still cover because their corners have played so well. I think they can match up with Jacksonville's receivers and try to stop Fournette. The best thing that could happen is the Bengals go into the fourth quarter with a lead, or Blake Bortles has to throw the ball 35, 40 times to try to come back and win it. He has not been put in that situation hardly at all this year. And, you know, they've been playing with a lead, running the football, controlling the line of scrimmage, controlling the clock, and, you know, not having to make Blake Bortles win the football game. So let's see if the Bengals can, you know, control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. And with the offensive line, it's impossible in my mind, James, to control the line of scrimmage if you don't attack it. I hope they just come off the football and attack it. None of this lateral step, drop step, you know, give up the line of scrimmage nonsense. Attack that sucker.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Well, one last one for you, Dave, because I look at the draft in April, and I loved everything about it. I thought they got a ton better talent-wise, and we've seen it with Joe Mixon and Carl Lawson and Jordan Willis and Ryan Glasgow. I mean, they have a lot of guys that have added to this team and been productive. One player I want to ask you about, because I was such a fan of the pick, is the 9th overall pick, John Ross. How is he faring right now? What are the team's thoughts, I guess, on him? Because he only played, I think, 5 or 6 snaps last week, even though he was healthy.
Yeah, I think they feel like he's so far behind. Because, you know, getting healthy was the first step, but he's in the infancy of training camp again now. You know, I mean, other guys are in mid-season in terms of the number of snaps they've taken. He wasn't able to take, you know, snaps in OTA. Mm-hmm. OTAs. He wasn't able to take snaps in early stages of training camp. So, I mean, he's had sporadic time frames where he's been healthy enough to practice and therefore has had no, you know, continuity with respect to ramping up and learning the Bengals offense and learning what it takes to play in the NFL. I just think they feel like he's so far behind. And Cody Core is healthy. It's going to be interesting to see if they deactivate John Ross or if they don't, because Cody Core, when healthy, is a gunner on the punt team. That's a big role, you know, and special team snaps are going to be determining who's one of those five receivers that are active and who's not. So because of Cody Core's concussion and, another injury, I mean, Brandon LaFell, he didn't practice yesterday. I don't know what his status is today.
He is out there from what I've seen.
Okay. So, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, if all hands are on deck, it wouldn't shock me if John Ross is deactivated for the game, potentially. So unless he's really shown ramping it up during the course of practice the last couple of weeks. Because the Bengals, in Marvin Lewis's philosophy is, like he says all the time, I see better than I hear.
Yeah.
You know, you got to show me you're out there making plays and running crisp routes and knowing exactly what you're supposed to do and being where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there for your quarterback, particularly with an offensive line that's struggling. We can't have guys in the wrong spots at the wrong time. You know, now we're turning the ball over. And, you know, obviously that's another thing. I mean, you look at this matchup, Jacksonville's +8, the Bengals are -10. You know, you can't have a bigger disparity in the turnover ratio. I mean, the Jaguars are amongst the league leaders, and the Bengals are amongst the basement. So, you know, they can't be turning the football over. If they think John Ross isn't ready, or that they feel the readiness isn't where it needs to be, and he could lead to turnover potential, they won't play him.
Dave, you've been great with your time. I just have one last thing because I just want to say I think I look at this offense, and when he is ready, I think there's certainly room for Ross to have a big impact. I think last year I looked at that team. They needed a speedster at wide receiver, someone that could bring a dynamic like him opposite A.J. Green. How did you feel about the pick? How do you feel about it now?
I mean, I felt like that's exactly what they were trying to do. They wanted to do the same thing with Fuller the year before. You know, he was the guy that they targeted to take the top off the defense on the other side of A.J. Green. When they had Marvin Jones, they were able to get that accomplished. And look at what it did for everybody else. When Marvin Jones left, they lost that dynamic. They lost that deep threat guy. LaFell's a very talented receiver, but that's not his game. You know, he's not going to take the top off the defense. Tyler Boyd's not going to take the top off the defense. Alex Erickson is not going to take the top off the defense. You know, that was the missing component in the receiver core. So, and Fuller, you know, has had his moments when he's done that. He's been big down there for Hopkins, you know, so.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with the pick. I mean, it was a guy that they had rated as a top 10 talent because of his, not only his speed, but his ability to, he's not a one trick pony. He can run great routes. I mean, the guy is a talented receiver. It's just, he's got to, you know, got to be able to stay on the football field or get on the football field. Never mind stay, get on the football field to get his NFL career started, kick started. But I do think, you know, that he can provide a dynamic that they sorely need. And at some point during the course of the season, you got to hope that he's going to do it.
Lap, I appreciate the time as always. I know I went long with you, but hopefully we talk next week and we're talking about a 4-4 Bengals team.
I hear that, James. That dog would hunt right there now.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Dave.
See you, sir.
That's Dave Lapham. Great insight there, man. I mean, look, we covered everything from John Ross to the offensive line to Andy Dalton to A.J. McCarron, and that's why I felt like, hopefully you enjoyed it, because that's why I felt like I needed to let you listen to that, give that here. Obviously, it's on my blog and stuff like that for the station, but I know my Locked On audience is certainly different than what I have in Cincinnati. So I offered it earlier. Come meet me for a beer in Jacksonville. Any Bengals fans going to the game on Sunday, let's meet up for a beer. I know I got a tweet earlier. You can tweet me at James Erpine, at Locked On Bengals. And as always, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, and also now we are on Megaphone. So it's great to have you. Hopefully I'm wrong. I think it's going to be a 27-10 game this Sunday. I do. I think Jacksonville is going to dominate up front. I hope to God I'm wrong. I just don't see how the team I watched against Indianapolis last Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium doesn't get its ass kicked up front against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So hopefully I'm wrong. If so, 4-4, it would mean hope. It would mean a chance at the playoffs. It would mean a lot for this team. I just don't see it. But it's not like I haven't been wrong before. I appreciate you guys for listening. Have a great weekend. I'll be sporadically on Twitter if you want to ask me Bengals stuff, tailgating before the game on Sunday. But until then, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Locked On Bengals podcast.